time for the FTN NBA podcast. Breaking down all the news, stats, trades, and more from the exciting basketball world. Here are your hosts, Adam Pfeiffer and Zach Graham.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome in the FTN NBA podcast. Back at it here, mid-March. March Madness, actually, kicking off tomorrow. But as always, we are here to talk about the National Basketball Association. My name is Zach Graham, a.k.a. Kawhisenberg, DFS, co-host here alongside my good buddy. It's Adam Pfeiffer. You can find him at apfeiffer24 on Twitter. And Adam, I know you've been head down a little bit in some of the NFL Combine stuff about 10 days ago. Now NFL free agency, or at least like the legal tampering period that has kicked off this week. I know you've been busy with that, but you're kind of splitting your time between, you know, the pigskin and the hoops right now. So I'm excited to dive into what we have to talk about today. But how you been doing, man?
I'm good, buddy. It's just been, you know, once you get the combine and stuff, and then, you know, where we're at now in the middle of March, it's a lot of news for football. So I've been trying to balance that out. Still following basketball, you know, very closely, obviously, but trying to balance is always fun. But we haven't had a pod in a little bit. I'm excited to be back, and I'm just gonna say, I am very, 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 very excited to talk about basketball again, because, you know, I get into this like mindset where it's like, once the like week 16, week 17 starts for football, I get fully invested in the NBA. Mm-hmm. And then once we get into the All-Star break for basketball, that's when I start getting back into football. So it's like, when I get really into one of the sports, I kind of just really, really focus on that. So I'm glad to be talking some hoops again.
So I think there's a lot of things that we could talk about, more in the off the court or like TMZ-ish style of news right now. You know, number one on everybody's mind would probably be Ja Morant and what's going on there. The only thing I have to say about that man is like, it does seem like he's at a rehab facility in Florida. This is just me trying to piece together the information that is out there. Rumors about, you know, a heavy drinking problem, things like that. I just hope, like, whatever it is, clearly this guy is going through some trauma or, like, you know, having some issues dealing with maybe some previous hardships in his life. And I just hope that he's able to get any help that he needs and can find some peace and make his way back to the court, even if that's not until next season. Like, we love him as a player. He does show a lot of really great qualities off the court in terms of his time with children, like on the side of the court, whether he's signing autographs or whatever, or charitable contributions off the court. So again, we don't have to spend a ton of time on this because I think it's just a little bit of a delicate situation. And I just wanted to say that I think both of us just kind of wish him the best. And we hope that he gets back, you know, whenever that time comes. I hope it's sooner rather than later because I love Ja Morant.
Yeah, absolutely. Echo that. Just, you know, you don't really know everything what's going on, especially in terms of like everybody's mentals and stuff like that. So there's like, it may, like, if you're a Memphis fan or something, like, there may, it may seem like, oh, we need Ja back immediately. And like, yeah, obviously he's your best player. But like, there's, in terms of like taking care of yourself and everything around you first, there is no such thing as a rush. Like, you have to take all the time that is necessary. So I hope Ja's doing that, and I hope he gets everything, you know, taken care of, and, you know, gets back relatively quickly.
I mean, we could also dive into just the I'll say we won't dive into, but I did just want to like kind of talk back and forth about, like, I don't know, again, you've been focused a lot on the football stuff, but were you keeping up at all with the zeitgeist around the MVP race last week?
Dude, I can't. I talked about this on stream with Kyle because We're talking about Philadelphia. They were on the slate. And, like, I guess what my real point of view was, it's a lot easier for me to say because I'm not invested in Philadelphia, Milwaukee, Denver. Like, I'm a Cavs fan. I don't root for those other teams. So, like, but as a fan of basketball, as a fan of some of the best players in the NBA, as a fan of Embiid, as a fan of Jokic, as a fan of Giannis, I'm just so tired of seeing Embiid go for 42, 18, 6, and then immediately, he's the MVP. He's the best player in the league. And then Jokic goes for 38, 12, and 10. He's the best. He's the MVP. Then Giannis goes for 40, 18, and 11. They are the three clear frontrunners. Mm-hmm. But more so, it's not even much Giannis. It's the fact that Philadelphia fans just despise Jokic because he's won the MVP awards, and he's like, I guess they're not even rivals. That's the thing about it. Jokic and Embiid really like each other and respect each other. So, like, it's just Philadelphia fans and Denver fans trying to make the case that their center is the best. And so that answer is yes, right? Like, if you think Embiid's the best, he's amazing. That's fine. Yeah. If you think Jokic is the best center, he's amazing. That's fine. I'm just getting so sick of seeing it. And especially was that game, what was it, against, might have been against San Antonio, where, like, there somebody tweeted out that the team shot 19 of 32 when Jokic was the defender. And it's like, that, okay, is he running for defensive player of the year? Then I don't give a shit. I don't give a shit at all. Everybody who even slightly follows the NBA knows Embiid just isn't a better defensive player than Jokic. He's light years better. That's not the discussion, though. Like, that has nothing to do, I don't want to say nothing to do, but very minimal to do with the MVP race. So, again, it's easier for me to say because I'm not, you know, I'm not rooting for the Sixers or whatever, but, like, I'm just so tired of seeing both fan bases just kind of, like, hate on the other center when they're two of the five best, most dominant players and most amazing players in the entire world. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it is very silly, to your point, how much people jump back and forth. Or, like you said, right, like, use a single game to illustrate, well, this is why my guy should be the MVP, or this is why your guy should not.
Because, like, Jokic lost to San Antonio.
Bro, Philly lost to the Spurs.
I was literally going to say that. They lost to the Spurs when the Spurs were trying.
Yeah.
So it happens. Like,
so that's
the Cavs lost to the Spurs. Like, these things happen. Golden State, remember, like, maybe it doesn't look as, you know, Golden State lost, like, a stretch where they lost to Charlotte, Orlando. Like, these things happen. Like,
yeah. And I'm sure, like, a Philly fan would point to that early season loss and say it was early in the season and Embiid still had 40 and 13. But it's like, okay, but Jokic had 37, 11, and 11 against the Spurs in that loss that last week. Like, and part of the argument, again, I know we can move on here in a second, but part of the argument for Jokic is that his team around him is complete trash. Like, without Jokic, that the Nuggets are maybe not even a playoff team. And I just don't think it's the same with Philly. So again, like, everybody, it does seem like everybody has a slightly different interpretation of what the MVP award means to them or what the qualifications should be to win that award. But for me, like, the valuable part plays a huge role. And, like, obviously Philly would also take a huge step back without Embiid. And I think, like, if we were just putting the MVP award into that box that I'm building here of, like, who is the most valuable, like, Milwaukee has the best team of the three if you take all three of the MVP candidates off of those teams. So, like, but I don't knock Giannis for that because we know how freaking good he is. Just like you were saying, like, all three guys, like, somebody would make an argument to us and we'd be like, yes. And then a fan from one of the other teams could make an argument for their guy and be like, yes, okay, you're great. There's only one award to go around. And, like, I think at this point, like, my vote, if I had one, would still be for Jokic. But I'm not losing any sleep if any of those three guys win it because, like you said, they're all deserving. The one thing we're not going to do is say that there's some sort of, like, race issue around the MVP award. Like, and maybe Kendrick Perkins, like, comments were taken out of context. I don't know. I saw something about that and kind of just ignored it because it's ridiculous on the surface. But yeah, I think, like, for the league, right, from a wide view on this MVP race, Adam, it's a good thing to have three all-time level players here battling it out now for multiple seasons in a row. I think for the league, it's a good thing that we have so much of this top-tier talent. But speaking of top-tier talent, what we really want to do on this episode of the FTN NBA podcast is talk about all of those contenders, right? We were doing the tiers updates kind of over the last 2+ months or so. And so kind of jumping back into the tiers, but let's go ahead, like, let's throw out the Suck Red Blue tier. Let's throw out the Dumb Idiot tier, right? Those teams are of no consequence to us at this point of the season. So let's just focus on like dark horses and up. And so if we're looking at just dark horses and up, I have 15 teams still in those tiers, Adam. So what I want to do is kind of touch a little bit on all 15 of those teams and just discuss like the merits of each team as contenders, right? Like how much of a chance do they really have? What do they need to happen? Maybe seeding wise, matchup wise, health wise, to have a legit shot. And maybe we're not talking about title contention for all of these teams. Because like if you bring up a team like the Pelicans or the Knicks or the Sacramento Kings, right? Like those teams are probably not making the finals and certainly not winning it. But I don't think any of those teams that I just mentioned, and there's even more of them on this list that I think they don't need to win a title to look at the end of their postseason run and say that this season or this playoffs was a failure, especially for the Kings, right? Just getting in for the Kings. And I guess we can start there. We can kind of go out of order if that's okay with you. Like Kings, now in the 3 seed in the West, Memphis has made a slight push here, winning their last 3. Kings, though, even though they lost their last time out, 8-2. Over their last 10 games, 1 game back of the 2 seed and 4 games up on the Suns, who are sitting in 4th. So we are, as we speak, 15 games away from the end of the NBA regular season. So the Kings would really have to crater here, I think, which for the sake of all the Kings fans, I will knock on wood here for them. I'm not trying to jinx what they've got going on there in Sacramento, but like, it does appear like they are going to at least host a first-round playoff series. So I'll ask you, Adam, how for real, for lack of a better term, are the Kings? Because they are going to be a playoff team.
Yeah. I mean, to an extent, they've been for real as a good team all year, pretty much. Like, mm-hmm. They've had one of the league's best offenses all year. They have 2 borderline all-stars. I mean, Sabonis made it. Fox, did Fox get in? I can't even remember, so long ago. Ant got in. And Fox got in, too. I can't remember. But, you know, 2 all-star players in the starting 5. I've talked about, I don't even think it's a question now who the coach of the year should be in the NBA.
Sure.
It should be Mike Brown. We talked about this team a lot, and I always bring up the point of how good of a job Mike Brown's done just in general, but especially bringing that Golden State style of offense to Sacramento, where it's building around Sabonis and then just a bunch of movement, pin down screens and shooting, off of him. And he is probably the 2nd or 3rd best facilitating center in the NBA. So it's a perfect fit. Now, the question is like, we've seen historically the teams that win the NBA championship most of the time are at least like a top 10 to 12 defense at the minimum. Right. And this team ain't it, right? Like they're still really, really bad defensively. Like
bottom 6 in defensive rating, I think.
I mean, you look at their starting 5 of, or at least the 5-man lineup of Fox, Herter, Barnes, Keegan Murray, and Sabonis. It's one of the 5 worst teams in terms of points per possession allowed. Points per 100 possession allowed, I should say, mm-hmm. at like 116 points per 100 possession, like a 59% field goal percentage. That's actually the worst among 5-man units. So like they are bad defensively. And I think that's probably going to get to a point where it costs them in a series. But like, look at the standings right now. I mean, if the season ended today, they'd be playing what? The Clippers?
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be a tough draw, but... Yeah, I mean, they'd be hosting it. So,
when you talk about home court advantage, right? Like, obviously, I think it's the longest American professional sports playoff drought. Are like the Kings are holding that record right now. But if we can harken all the way back to when, I don't know, Adam, you were maybe 2 years old the last time the Kings were in the postseason, but that fan base is going to be rabid once the postseason comes around. So I do think that that home court advantage is legit for them. Whereas for some teams, it's maybe just, okay, it's good that we're at home. I think this is going to be a really tough place to play.
Yeah. And 8-2 over the last 10, like, 21-14 at home this season, but they've been good on the road. Are they going to win the NBA Finals? No, but they've been legit in terms of a good team all year, right? They were, they've pretty much been top five in the West all season long. They got to second at one point recently, then Memphis got on a little bit of a streak. Right behind Memphis, though, for the two seed, like, there's a chance they're not even playing LA. There's a chance they're playing Minnesota, LA, the other LA team.
It could be like eight different teams at this point, right?
Right. It's insane. So are they a legit team? Yes, they have been all year. Mm-hmm. They have the coach of the year. They have the perfect system and the perfect pieces around it. It's just going to come down to the defense. And just we've seen historically that these teams that win the championship, they don't just have like good enough defenses. They have good to great defenses, right? You look at the last couple teams that have won. Obviously, those Golden State teams had really good defensive units. Milwaukee, Toronto was a good defensive team. Like, it's just, it's very tough. Boston went to the finals last year, and they were elite defensively last year. So, it's just tough to win the NBA championship if you're league average to slightly below league average defensively, let alone bottom seven. So, that's the only concern for this team. But overall, like, this has been a win for this team, for this franchise, for the city. Like, it's been fun. They're gonna get to host a playoff game. And really, like, that's all you can ask for. Like, it's already a win for them this season.
Yeah, I would imagine that most of their fans were thinking, like, play in. And if we get into that top six, that it's probably surpassing all of the more realistic expectations that they
By the way, set. Before we move on to the next team, just got to get it out of the way. Aaron Rodgers did come out and say he intends to play with the Jets.
I saw that.
So have fun being the second best quarterback in the division, pal.
Last thing I did want to say about Sacramento is that one may be under the radar. I don't know if people are talking about this a lot when it comes to the Kings, but best road record in the West at 19-13. And that may just be,
they're the anti-Warriors,
right? I mean, 7-26. That's incredible how bad they've been on the road, but I think it may be a commentary. 19-13 is a very good road record, but it's not insane or anything. That's sixth best if you include the entire league. So it's not like this is some off the charts road team, maybe more of a commentary on how bad the West has been as a whole on the road this season. But I think, you know, it's just another small checkbox in the corner of maybe the Kings can make a little noise here in the playoffs. And by that, I mean like win a round. What point of the playoffs do the Kings have to make for you to be like, holy shit, this is crazy? Is it just winning one?
No, because like if they pass Memphis and get the two seed, like they have to be clear favorites. Like if they host the Clippers in a 3-6 matchup, I don't think they go into that as like the unquestioned favorites, right?
I agree.
But if they're hosting, right? But if they're hosting Minnesota, Oklahoma City, Dallas, LA, yeah, I mean, like. But to me, like, so, like, if they win a first-round series against those teams I just mentioned, I'm not really, like, it's impressive that they get a playoff win, obviously, but I'm not really moved because I think they're just overall better basketball teams.
Sure.
But I will say, like, if they end up playing, like, Golden State or the Clippers or something in a 3-6 matchup and win, even with home court, that's when I get a little interested. Especially if they beat Golden State. Like, if they actually played Golden State in a 7-game series and won.
Yeah.
That's when we go, okay, like, even with the issues, and we'll talk about Golden State shortly, but like that's when I get to a point where, yeah, my eyebrow starts to raise.
Well, I think regardless of opponent, if they win two series and they end up in the conference final somehow, that is, to me, that's where I'm like,
that's when, like, you just start throwing shit off your desk. And yeah. Like,
I mean, it's like, you know,
it's the, yeah, it's the, Michael Scott, oh my God, this is happening. Like, that's
for me, that means if we see them in the conference finals, that means that somebody on one of the two teams they beat, somebody important got hurt.
So it's like the Golden State path for those early stretches.
I mean, most teams that make runs like that.
That's true. It is very true.
Get some injury luck along the way. And in the form of bad luck for other teams, just as much as they can stay healthy for the 2.5 month run. I think we can touch on some of these very quickly, starting with the Pelicans.
Real quick.
Yeah.
Let me just, do you 100% agree with me about Mike Brown, coach of the year?
Yeah. He would be my
coach. I haven't looked at like the odds, but he should win and shouldn't be close, in my opinion.
I'm trying to pull those up here in a minute. But just real quick, I still have New Orleans as the dark horse category, not necessarily for a title, because if we started the playoffs today, they're not even in the play-in. They're a game back right now.
But, which is fucking insane, because they were like the number two team in the West when everything was going well.
Well, Zion Williamson, breaking news, he's pretty damn good. And when he's not playing, the team struggles. So, like, for me, they're in the dark horse category still. And I just, again, not probably to contend for a title, but to maybe make some noise as one of the tougher, you know, 7 or 8 seeds that we could see. If Zion does come back healthy, I think it's like 2 weeks still until he could potentially come back. But if he is there with a week left in the regular season, gets his legs back under him through the final 2 or 3 games, and he's available for a play-in game, like, that team is just going to be, and I know this is not a hot take, but they're just going to be a lot more dangerous than people are giving them credit for right now. So the fact that they are not eliminated yet and Zion is not out for the year, I just think they are still a team that we need to discuss. Like, I'm not surprised if they get matched up with a Sacramento in the first round, and if the Pelicans are healthy, that they could pull off that type of an upset. Or if they match up with the Grizzlies in a 2-7 situation, something like that, and they still don't have Steven Adams and John Morant's still going through his process away from the team. Like, I'm not shocked if the Pelicans, who were, to your point, like halfway through the season, the 2 seed in the West, I'm not surprised if they do win around here if they get healthy. But that is obviously a huge if.
Yeah, and I mean, we saw them kind of push Phoenix last year without Zion.
Yeah.
So you have a second year for Herb Jones and Trey Murphy, who just popped off the other day with 41.
Love Trey Murphy.
Yeah. You have, you know, hopefully, because like, it hasn't just been Zion. Like, B.I. has been able to stay healthy. McCollum's been up and down. JoVal's, like, not even as JoVal's minutes are always a concern, but, like, they've been even more so a concern lately because he's just been defensively terrible. We talked about the question I have, like, how much is Zion going to help with the rim protection? Because this team is like a 73% field goal percentage allowed at the rim. They cannot protect the basket. Mm-hmm. So, like, facing a team like Sacramento with De'Aaron Fox, who drives the basket a ton, facing a team potentially like, I don't know, whoever, that, like, if they face Memphis and Ja's there, we know Ja would, you know, just destroy that interior defense. So, that's my concern. But yeah, like, we know when they're at their peak and when they're healthy, they're probably isn't a team with more depth in the entire league, so they would be. And we've seen them when they've been full strength. JoVal didn't have to play in the fourth quarter. He didn't close. It was Nance and Zion. So yeah. Like, they have enough. Their young players have played in you know, pretty meaningful games. Not like, you know, huge games, but, you know, notable games, I would say. So they're always in that range of, like, you have to keep an eye on them because we know the ceiling, albeit in a little bit of a small sample size, when they've been at full strength. But and the other thing is, it's not just the fact that we have to keep an eye on them because it's not like they're, like, insanely out of it right now because of how mm-hmm. crazy, like, 7 through, you know, 12 is.
Yeah. I mean, they are 3 games now. Again, about, I think most teams, 13 to 15 games remaining. They are 3 games back of the 5 seed. So, like, even with less than a month left in the regular season, there's still so much yet to be determined here. And that's why I brought them up. And I'm glad you didn't laugh me off the mic, because I know, like, I know it's a reach even if they're healthy at this point, because we haven't seen that consistency. We haven't seen them be able to stay healthy. We talk a lot about Zion. Brandon Ingram's availability has been an issue over the last 2 years. So again, like, it needs to be a perfect storm for them to make noise in the playoffs, but I just don't think it's out of the question. Let's flip to the Eastern Conference for a pair of teams here. Let's start with the Heat. We've talked a lot about Miami this season. We've put some of their guys in a lot of the fake trades that we like to do, specifically me. But they are currently the 7 seed out West, 13.5 games back of Milwaukee, who clinched the first playoff berth, I believe, last night. But this is a team, despite all of their age and their own struggles with staying healthy, this is a team that was one shot away from the NBA Finals last year. And I know we've acknowledged before, but I'm going to do it again. This is just a team that deserves, has earned, through multiple iterations over the last decade, this is a franchise that deserves our respect when it comes to the postseason. And I know their potential opponents have that respect for how Miami operates and the members of this team. I would still be very surprised if we see them in another conference finals. I definitely don't want to play them in a first round series, almost no matter who is healthy, because as long as they've got Jimmy and Bam out there, it's going to be a tough matchup, because they've got those two guys who are very good. They've got one of the best coaches over the last 15 years in the NBA in Eric Spoelstra, very good playoff coach. And I'm not surprised to see them win a series, even though they've been below average for the bar that, you know, I think fans have set for them, and they have really set for themselves, being a model franchise over a long period of time. So what's your feeling on the Heat? Because again, I think they can make some noise. I'm also not surprised if they're just a first round out this year.
So looking at the standings and everything, it doesn't appear like it'll happen. But if I'm the Cavs in the 4 spot, I'd much rather play Miami than New York.
Yeah.
Like, Miami, similar to Memphis we talked about, half-court offense is just putrid. Really, really bad. So you look at it, according to Cleaning the Glass, almost 81% of their plays on offense come in the half-court. It's one of the 5 or 6 highest rates in basketball. But per 100 half-court plays, 95.4 points per 100 plays. That's bottom 7. Like, they've been so bad in the half court. You know, Lowry's been really not there for most of the season. They're not getting a ton from their point guard position. We know Hero and Love defensively aren't great. And again, they'll play a lot of zone, which I talk about all the time. But I just don't trust their half court offense. And defensively, they're still, you know, solid. But, like, I don't know. Like, when you're a team that has a bad half-court offense, doesn't have a ton of three-point shooting, really. I love Bam. I love Jimmy. But to me, where they're at right now in the Eastern Conference, which is, what, 7th?
Yeah.
I think that's where you should rank them. Maybe over Brooklyn, but if, I mean, shit, if Bridges keeps playing like this, I don't know if I would do that. I don't know. I just, you know, they're 14-20 on the road, 19-23 at home. They're just, like, right now, to me, where they're at, which is an average team. And, like, right now they're in the play-in. So, like, they'd be facing, you know, Atlanta, Toronto. And, like, I don't think they're, like, substantially better than those teams, especially with how bad their half-court offense is. So, yeah, like, I think their ceiling, and it sounds crazy to say this, I think their ceiling is, like, especially in the East, I think it's, like, they win a first-round series and then they lose in the second.
Yeah, I think that's probably the ceiling I see as well. But I'm glad you brought up the Knicks. Like, in talking, I know you had the Homer hat on for a second.
I don't want to play them. I'm just going to be honest with you. I don't want to play them.
I think you are.
We're probably going
to. You should not want to play them, because they're just like, even if they don't make it out of the first round, it is going to be a grind every single game against this team, because they've got the buy-in. They have made a few, you know, changes on the fringes with bringing in Josh Hart. And we saw them playing, like, very un-Tibbs-like rotations during the middle part of the season. And over the last like 6 weeks, they've really honed it back down, or like Tibbs has grabbed all of the reins, pulled everything back in. And, you know, it's like a 6.5 man rotation night to night at this point. But like, that can work for this team, and that certainly can work in the playoffs. I don't know if they have another gear, because this is something I've worried about with Tom Thibodeau teams going into the postseason in the past, is that once you get into those playoff series, and the further you get, the more this comes to pass, those rotations for every team do shorten. Once you get to the playoffs, the minutes for your better players.
So that means they're playing, what, 6 players?
Yeah, see, that's what I'm like. I don't know how much room there is for improvement for this Knicks team.
Mr. Robinson doesn't like his role. Did you see that?
No, I didn't. Oh, my God.
He, like, posted something on IG about him essentially just getting cardio when he's on the floor.
I mean, man, sometimes, especially in this era of, like, hoops in general, sometimes the big man's not going to touch the ball. So, I just don't know how much higher the ceiling is for this team. I'm not surprised if they do get that first round win, but maybe similar to the Kings, just results wise, especially because they're in the tougher conference. I would be shocked if the Knicks win 2 playoff series.
Yeah, it's just like if they beat Cleveland, assuming that's the way it shapes out to end the season, then you have the top 3 to deal with. It's brutal.
This is a reason, I think, that you look at these championship odds and teams like the Heat and the Knicks are sitting behind the Kings, because they have to deal with that gauntlet there in the East.
The top 3 in the East of Milwaukee, Boston, and Philly, in my opinion, are better than any team in the West pretty easily. And like, I've been high on Denver, but they started to slow down a little bit. Some bad losses. Philly's been fantastic. Like, I'm at the point now where I'm taking all 3 of those teams over anybody in the West pretty comfortably. And it's just like I just don't envision a scenario where they're going into Milwaukee, into Philly, into Boston and winning 4 out of 7.
Let's go ahead.
And I hate to say it, but that's the same way I feel about Cleveland.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, we can talk. You want to talk Cleveland? Let's just talk Cleveland.
I don't have much to say, honestly, which is a shocker. Like, they're a really good team.
Yeah.
Are they going to beat? I mean, like, they've played well against these teams, right? Like, they are 2-2. I forget if they played 4 or 3 times, but they've beaten Boston twice. They beat Philadelphia once and then lost to them last game, where they were down by like 30 and came back but lost. And the Milwaukee one, like, they haven't beat them with Giannis, I believe. Maybe they beat them. They beat them without Giannis for sure. And I think they beat them without Middleton and then got smoked by him early in the year with everybody healthy. I don't know. Like, the concern with Cleveland is the concern it's been all year. Wing depth, overall depth. Can they get consistent scoring from Caris LeVert, who's been really good lately, but like, he's been very up and down. As long as Jared Allen's back from his eye injury relatively soon, he'll obviously be important. But Mobley's the X factor. I've said it all year. Aggressive Evan Mobley makes this team really dangerous. Are they going to be good enough to beat Philly, Milwaukee, or Boston? I doubt it, but they have a better chance of doing it than anybody else in the West or in the East, because they have 2 elite guards. They have great defensive players, and like, you're not stopping Giannis or Joel Embiid, but they have the pieces and the you know, the core to give you the best chance with Allen and Mobley. Like, there's no better duo to try to slow down Giannis and Embiid. So I don't know, like, there's gonna be a couple playoff games where the Cavs shoot like 6 of 30 from 3 and it ends up costing them. I think that's what it's going to come down to, other than the fact that Milwaukee, Philly, and Boston are just overall deeper, better basketball clubs. But again, with Cleveland, we talked about it with Sacramento. They would have made the playoffs last year if they didn't have Allen get hurt, Mobley get hurt down the stretch. They got in the play-in, couldn't get in. But at this point, they're kind of playing with house money as well, right? Like, sure. This incredibly young team, the addition of Donovan Mitchell obviously has put them in an upper echelon in the East. So, like, if they, as a Cavs fan personally, like if they win that first round series against whoever they play and then really push whoever they play in the second round, and I see Garland and Mobley have some really strong showings in the playoffs in their first playoff experience, yeah, I'll be happy. But again, like, there could be some games where Donovan Mitchell scores 44 and they steal a game. So I'm not saying it's impossible for them to beat those teams in a seven-game series, but it's just so hard to choose them over any of those teams right now.
I think that's a pretty level-headed take coming from, like, the biggest Cavs fan I know, to be honest. Like, and maybe it's just...
Well, yeah, well, next year they're going 82-0 and yeah. They're winning everything.
I mean, I think,
like, to me, the X factors are, like, Mobley and LeVert. If LeVert has a bunch of just inconsistent games again, they're not going to have the depth. Like, Lamar Stevens has played well for them. He's yeah. there to play defense, get some offensive rebounds. Dean Wade has not even been part of the rotation. Chetty finally came back in the rotation yesterday just because everybody was out, mm-hmm. scored 24. But, like, there's just been no consistency there. Okoro slowed down three-point shooting because that was expected. But I just think – I said that – remember, I said this months ago. I said their ceiling is probably second round. And I still kind of believe that, but yeah. – Who knows, man? Like, they have a better chance of getting to the Eastern Conference Finals than any team outside the top three pretty easily.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, because they're closing five, right? If those four studs, and I'm, you know, maybe I'm being liberal with the use of the word, but like if they have Allen, Mobley, Mitchell, and Garland all healthy.
No, those four players are legitimate studs.
That is one of the best, you know, like you said, core four kind of like lineups that you can put out there. Obviously, to your point, that wing depth in that fifth spot, whether it's LeVert, whether it's Okoro, whether it's Chetty, like those guys are going to have to probably overperform their yeah. baseline. To
it's either them. That or Mitchell has to average like 38.
Right, right. And everybody else has got to pick it up a little bit too. And like the defense has to stick and everything. Yeah. And like maybe I don't think I'm worried about the defense. But yeah, I think one win and then out is probably the baseline for success this year, right? Like, I don't think you can
play. Like, I would be so pleased, honestly. Like, would I like Cleveland to make a crazy run and get to the finals? Absolutely. Yeah. But, like, realistically, if they win in six, seven games in round one, and then whoever they play in round two push to six, maybe mm-hmm. seven?
Yeah.
Yeah. That and we see Garland, Mobley, you know, these young players really shine in the postseason. Yeah, I'll be pretty happy. And by the way, this is a little bit unrelated, but it's still about Cleveland, so it is related. What are the lines right now for Defensive Player of the Year? Because I think Evan Mobley, and I'm biased, obviously, he needs to be top three. This is insane what he's doing. I'm gonna assume it's Brooke, Triple J. Mobley should be top three. I really don't care what anybody says.
Mobley is fifth. He is currently behind.
That's horseshit.
You had the top two. Then you've got Bam.
Horseshit.
16-1. Giannis 25-1. Mobley 35-1. I do think, not saying it's right, I do think the fact that he plays next to Jared Allen,
sure,
does not help his case with the voters. But yeah, I got no argument. I mean, he's been fantastic. But the good thing for you is, as a Mobley fan, as a Cavs fan, is that he will probably be in contention for that and many other.
Do you want to? Where did you have him in our player tiers? Did you have him in future? Where did you have him?
I think it was future All NBA. I think.
Just making sure. I didn't know if you didn't. If you wanted to change it, because
I can actually find that right now because I don't have to go back too far. Yeah, future All NBA tier with Zion, LaMelo, Triple J, Hallie, and Paolo,
and Garland when you add him.
You Garland is in the All Star tier.
Wait, let's move on from Cleveland.
Yeah, I mean, the last thing I was going to say was like, I'm glad you went further than you did because you were talking about like that. You know, these guys have a lot of time. Don't lull yourself into this false sense of security because, like, teams with this many good players, it can be really tough to keep them together for more than 3 or 4 years. So, like, I do think after this season, there needs to be a little bit of a sense of urgency because you're getting into Mobley's third year. Jared Allen is very much a veteran. So are both of the guards, right? Like, so again, I don't think we need to have those expectations this year, clearly, but, you know, yeah. Keep the pressure on your boys going forward, man. I don't, you know, just because they're young doesn't mean they shouldn't be winning.
Yeah, and well, they have a test here on Wednesday. at home against Philly, so it should be good.
And now confirmed, no Jared Allen. So we're going to put that Defensive Player of the Year vote to the test tonight.
Listen, I think Mobley's one of the three best defensive players in the league. Let me just tell you right now, Joel Embiid is going to do so many things tonight against Cleveland.
Let's jump back to the West here for a minute. Let's talk two of the more fringe teams at this point, just based on what's going on with them. Let's talk Memphis and Dallas. We can talk Memphis first. Obviously, we touched on Ja Morant's situation earlier. Memphis has won three in a row. They're back up into that second seed. So I don't think we're going to see the full collapse, right, and dropping them into like the play-in or something like that. But if you don't have Ja Morant and Steven Adams come playoff time, team's in trouble. We know that they are still a above average team without Ja Morant, just based on the record. Like, I'm not saying that they're a better team. They are still a good team, certainly above average without him over the last 2 years record wise. So what do you see? Let's just say Ja unfortunately misses the remainder of this season and the playoffs. What's the ceiling for this Memphis team without him?
Without Ja?
Yeah.
Like, sorry, I was reading something. So, like, their ceiling in terms of where they finish in the regular season, or if the, or their ceiling without Ja if he's not there for the playoffs?
Yeah, without Ja for the playoffs. Like, how far can they go?
So, you're speaking to the number one Tyus Jones fan.
Yeah, I know.
But
is 38 minutes of Tyus Jones going to work in a playoff series?
No. I mean, yes, he's going to be solid, but we saw last year in a lot of these stretches against Golden State and Minnesota where Ja would score like 16 in a row for this team. Mm-hmm. So like, obviously, I think Tyus Jones pretty easily is the best backup point guard in basketball, but he's also not Ja Morant. And it's not even just that. Like, Ja is obviously unbelievable, and they obviously need him back. Steven Adams being out has been just brutal to this team. And it just doesn't get talked about enough. Like, he'll obviously, I haven't seen updates on him. But like, the best offensive rebounder in the NBA, outside of maybe Gobert, the best screen setter in the NBA, really underrated passer. You look at the splits with him for Memphis, like they're plus 7.3 per 100 possessions when he's on the floor. It's the highest differential on the team. Mm-hmm. Like, by far. They're plus 16 in terms of expected wins with Steven Adams on the floor. Obviously, their offensive rebounding rate, we don't have to talk about that. They're plus 11.3%. Like, they need Steven Adams. So it's like, I think, and this is a team that's also had a lot of issues scoring in the half court. That's why they brought in Luke Kennard, because A, they've struggled in the half court, and B, they've struggled to shoot the ball. I just think, If they have Ja, Adams, and Triple J, let alone Bane, obviously, too, but if Triple J can average, let's say, 28 to 30 minutes in the playoffs, let's just put it that low, because we know the foul trouble, they can get to the Western Conference Finals. They can maybe make to the finals just because the West really isn't that good. The problem is, and we'll talk about this team coming up, healthy Golden State, healthy Memphis, like, history's told me to go with Golden State. So,
yeah,
but it's also tough because Golden State hasn't been this goddamn bad on the road ever.
I still like with them, and we can talk Golden State here in a minute. Like, it's very hard to go against them if they're fully healthy, just knowing that they have seemingly another level once the playoffs come around. But yeah, for Memphis, like, I don't know, man, it's really matchup dependent. I'm not surprised if they're out in the first round without Ja Morant. If you're playing a team like, I don't know, healthy Lakers, right? Especially if the Clippers drop down, like, it's going to be damn near impossible to win a playoff series when you don't have either of the top two players in a series in terms of talent. Yeah. So like a healthy Dallas, even though they've,
it's another thing I should have mentioned with Cleveland too. Like, they have four top 40 ish players. Like, they have three top 30 players easily, in my opinion, with Mobley, Garland, and Mitchell. But there's a chance in the second round they won't have the best player in a series. The rest of the playoffs, which is insane. But that's been very important for the playoffs. Like, if you don't have the best player in a series, like, more so recently,
yeah,
it's tough to win.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I mentioned Dallas. Let's talk about Dallas.
I don't want to talk about Dallas.
We can make it quick. I think their ceiling is another trip to the Western Conference Finals, and that's if Luka and Kyrie are gelling. Again, they're going to have to beat teams with offense, and that's why I think I'm capping the ceiling at what it was last year, Western Conference Finals appearance, because they're just not good enough on defense. And giving away Dorian Finney-Smith in that Kyrie trade certainly didn't help that side of the ball. Maxi Kleber being back is obviously big, and so if he can stay healthy, that obviously helps their chances. But I'm only scared of them on one side of the ball, and I think most other teams probably see them in a similar light right now. So I don't think my hopes are super high on Dallas. I would be similar to a lot of these teams in the West. I think we're going to talk about it's matchup dependent. But there are very few matchups where Luka Doncic isn't the best player in that series. But the wild card that is Kyrie Irving makes me think maybe I shouldn't be shocked if Dallas does not make it out of the first round, because it's Kyrie Irving. Like, he hasn't had any playoff success since he was LeBron's number two. So we'll see what he does.
I also think Jason Kidd's rotations have kind of been shitty.
Well, that kind of comes with Jason Kidd.
Right. Like, there's been a lot of talk about, like, Christian Wood and not being able to find consistent minutes for him.
I don't necessarily think that's bad, because Christian Wood's not very good.
I mean,
if you're talking about winning basketball,
Christian Wood
ain't the guy you want.
We always talk about Christian Wood in terms of fantasy. He's great for fantasy. Right, but yeah, I would tend to agree. Since January 1st, which I believe is your favorite date because you always bring it up.
What was it? December 10th, a couple weeks ago.
These are the teams that are worse than Dallas in points per 100 half-court defensive plays.
Okay.
Only teams that are worse than Dallas. Houston, San Antonio, Portland, Sacramento.
And that's half-court offense?
Half-court defense.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes more sense.
Yeah. So they don't get stops. The difference last year, obviously, was they had Luka with his 38-40% usage, and they had capable shooting, but they had players that could get stops.
Mm-hmm.
And their ceiling, I would agree, like, this is a pretty easy team to break down. If Luka and Kyrie are on the floor, they can outscore anybody. And with that, their ceiling is the Western Conference Finals, especially in this Western Conference. But I just go back to what I said defensively. Like, it's just, we've seen over and over again, these teams that win the finals or make the finals have good to great defensive units. So that's where the concern's been all year, and that's where it continues to be.
Let's move on here.
Although I will say, for the ratings,
mm-hmm.
give me Phoenix Dallas Western Conference Finals, please.
Yeah. Let's do it earlier, though. Let's have that in the second round.
Yeah, I mean, regardless, as long as it happens, I want it to happen. You have the Luka Booker stuff. You have Durant, Kyrie. Like, it would be very fun.
Speaking of ratings, let's talk Golden State and let's talk both Los Angeles teams. Warriors, again, I think this is kind of a simple one. If they are healthy, it is very hard to pick against them in any series.
Do they get to play 7 home games in the playoffs?
Dude, away record be damned. It's just like, it is just the level of respect, at least in my mind, that these guys have earned over the last 8 years or however long this run has been now.
Too long.
Yeah, I mean, it's impressive. And especially with what they did last year, I just can't write them off. Ceiling for me, assuming health, is a title.
Yeah, I'm joking, but I do agree. Steph Curry's been back. He came back March 5th, so he's played 5 games.
Mm-hmm.
In those games, he's been Steph Curry. 31 points per game, 6 rebounds, 5.5 assists, shooting 51% from the field, 50% from 3 on 11.6 threes per game. So we know, remember early in the season, when Steph Curry was off the floor, this was one of the worst basketball teams in the league when he was off the floor. So him being on the floor is obviously paramount. We did see an update on Wiggins the other day. Like, he might not be back, right?
For the
regular season.
Yeah, I think what I saw was like maybe until April.
Yeah.
I guess the only thing I said this on stream the other night, like whatever it is, it feels like it's horrible. And I just hope that everything like works out and that he ends up okay, because personal issue undisclosed for this long. I think he's missed 9 games in a row now. And like you said, like whatever that report stated, it wasn't like, oh, he's back at the end of this week. It is multiple weeks. I think they still expect him to miss. I think Kerr was maybe making some comments about his absence. And that's where that report came from. But yeah, just, man, I really, really hope it's not as bad as it feels like it could be for him.
Yeah, so it was 2 days ago. It says Warriors uncertain if Andrew Wiggins will play again this season due to personal reasons. So, yeah, like basketball aside, doesn't even matter. I just definitely hope everything's okay. But yeah, Golden State, like, as long as they have Steph, Dre, Clay, hopefully Wiggins is back, and Kevon Looney. yeah, their ceiling is, like, we talk about this. Like, nobody, whoever, if it's Sacramento, Sacramento's not going to be happy that they drew Golden State in a 3-6 matchup if it happens, or whoever they play, Golden State, that is. So, yeah, even with the road issues, I think they're 7-29 in the road, 7-26. They have one of the worst home road splits, or the craziest home road splits in the history of basketball, which is just weird. But
and there's 3 teams in the league right now that have worse road records than they do.
Can I guess them?
Yeah, go ahead.
San Antonio and the Rockets are definitely on there. I think the last team would be either Detroit or Charlotte. I'll go Detroit, though.
It is Detroit. So basically,
look at me choosing three of the worst 5 teams. I'm a genius.
The 3 worst teams. Yeah. Those are the 3 teams that are going to have the top lottery odds for Wimby here in about 2 months. So yeah, the fact that the Warriors are on that level record wise on the road, it's just, again, I'm willing to look past it because of their pedigree. But it's not like I'm not trying to turn that into a positive. I just think it's not something I'm really factoring in terms of limiting their ceiling once the postseason arrives.
The crazy thing too is with Golden State, they have to shore up their defense.
Yeah, I mean, Andrew Wiggins helps.
100%.
Let's talk LA teams. I think both, like, it's interesting now. Again, I had the Clippers as my title pick over the Bucks to start the year. I think for me now, the ceiling on both of these teams, assuming health, is an NBA Finals appearance. I cannot put either of these teams in good conscience over Milwaukee or Boston right now. I'm not shocked if, you know, like, and I've been saying this about the Lakers for even before they made the trade, was like, hey, if they make the trade and Anthony Davis and LeBron James are healthy for those 2.5 months, which is a tall task, especially with how LeBron is clearly breaking down at this point. That guy didn't get injured for almost 20 years, and now just in the last 3 is getting hurt pretty frequently, whether it's like missing 2 games here or like 3 weeks there. Like, he doesn't have that same Iron Man streak as he did through the first 90% of his career. And that's fine. That happens when you are one of, if not the greatest basketball player of all time, and certainly the best career of all time in terms of his longevity and success. So, like, it feels bad not saying that there's a ceiling of just the Finals appearance, because if those guys get there, I probably won't have the same stance. I'll probably be like, well, yeah, they're here now, so of course there's a chance a LeBron James team could win it. But I feel like I have to draw a line somewhere. With some of these teams that aren't sitting at the very top and haven't been at the top all year, like the Milwaukees, the Bostons, the Denvers. So I think for me, both of these teams, especially with the weird addition of Russell Westbrook to the Clippers, like, I'm not against having Russ on the team, but immediately throwing him into the starting lineup. And then, like, now we're getting to the point where now he's not playing the fourth quarters. And so, like, by the time we get to the playoffs, I imagine, because Ty Lue's not a dummy, he may be a liar, but he's not a dummy. He's a good coach. I imagine we see Russell Westbrook come off the bench again soon, because I don't want to get to the first round and be like, okay, now's when we're going to go back to Terrence Mann at the one. Because they looked the best this year, I'm pretty sure. Like, maybe I'm talking out of my ass here. I don't have a ton of advanced numbers to bring up here, plus minuses with that five that they were running. But Terrence Mann at the one just makes so much more sense. And then you can still play Russ with that second unit. We know he's going to be able to buy into that. He just did it with the Lakers. It's probably not his favorite thing to do, but it's what definitely feels like needs to be done for this team to reach their apex. So again, a Kawhi Leonard team makes it to the finals. If that comes to pass, I'm not going to give them a 0% chance. But as we sit here in mid-March, I feel like that's kind of the ceiling. I would be very surprised if they took the whole thing down at this point. And that sucks because I picked those guys. I'm obviously a huge Kawhi fan, and I thought the Clippers were one of the best teams coming into the year. And they've shown flashes of being very good. It's just really hard for me to say that, to put them on the same level as the Warriors and then these other teams that we're going to talk about.
So your hunch with the Terrence Mann at the one was very spot on. That, like, it's not even remotely close. This team's best five-man unit this season in terms of points per 100 possessions. So it's been about, granted, it's only been about 270 possessions, it looks like. But Terrence Mann, Paul George, Kawhi, Marcus Morris, and Zubac, that starting five, that five-man unit, 133.6 points per 100 possessions.
Like, you know,
again, only less than 300 possessions, but like, yeah, we both definitely like Terrence Mann. I struggle with this team because, like, they've been so average. Like, they're literally 500 on the road. I think they're right around, yeah, they're 500 on the road, 18-18. They're 18-15 at home. They're three games above 500 for the season. But if you're getting to the playoffs and Paul George's minutes are more towards the 38-minute mark and Kawhi's been playing massive minutes lately anyway, look, this was, I can't remember if I picked this team in Philly or Denver in Philly in the beginning of the season, but I definitely picked Philly. But this team was in the Western Conference Finals for me pretty easily. Mm-hmm. They obviously added some pieces, too, at the deadline with Gordon, with Plumlee, which is good because Zubac was talking about how he was playing so many minutes, and he was playing career highs in minutes and kind of wanted to get some rest. So I think if there's one team that's currently outside the top five in the West that could get to the finals, outside of maybe Dallas, it would be this team, and then maybe a fully healthy team in the same arena, right? Like, they need LeBron, duh. But, like, there's been this, like, because obviously this team gets way more buzz nationally than the Timberwolves. Mm-hmm. But, like, I see all these, like, you know, these accounts and stuff that cover basketball, like, oh, D'Angelo Russell's number is, oh, like, it's not like he's been doing this since he's joined the Lakers. He's been really good for, like, 2.5 months now. This isn't new. Like, he's been so good for like 2-3 months now, shooting the basketball, pull-up jump shots, spot-up jump shots. He's been great since he joined this team. Austin Reaves has been giving them awesome minutes. Vanderbilt's been fantastic. Like, we liked this team a lot more after the deadline. So, like, when they're running and they're fully healthy, you know, their rotation is you know, you're going to have Russell, Schroeder, Reaves, LeBron, Troy Brown, Hachimura, Vanderbilt, Beasley, Brow. Like, that's not bad at all. And, like, that 10-player unit in the West, it's probably right up there with a lot of teams. Like,
so what's the ceiling?
I think the ceiling, shocker, but it's going to come down to Anthony Davis.
Okay.
Obviously, first and foremost, he has to stay healthy, but there's been games where Davis disappears and he takes like 8 shots in 34 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
They can't, maybe they can afford it a little bit more now with this constructed roster, but they overall, when you're playing the best teams in the league in pivotal 7-game series, they can't afford to have Davis disappear. So I think their ceiling, this is tough because I'm like, they have my favorite player of all time on the team, so I'm trying not to be too positive here. I think their ceiling is Western Conference Finals. I don't think they can beat.
Oh.
I don't think they can beat Denver or Golden State if they played them.
I appreciate the level-headed take from a member of the bronsexuals, because the other bronsexuals in my life, Adam, are at all-time ridiculous levels right now. I've got people telling me that they can beat any team in the league in a seven-game series if they're healthy. I've got people saying,
healthy Denver team would beat them in maybe six, probably five.
And that's funny because Denver with, and this is one of my best friends, he is adamant that the Lakers would win in six if both teams are fully healthy. And I'm just like, I don't know if it's six for either, but like to write off, I think writing off either team fully healthy against each other right now is just silly. I would certainly lean to Denver. But again, I find it interesting that my ceiling for them right now is a little bit higher than you see it. So again, maybe I need to pull back on my expectations.
So you have their ceiling as they can win a title?
I said making the finals. Clippers, I think, right now. It's just, it would be very hard for me. It's impossible for me right now.
My problem is if we're playing the ceiling game and every team is hitting their peak and staying healthy, they're not beating Golden State and they're not beating Denver.
And how about Phoenix? Because
if Phoenix is fully healthy, which Kevin Durant, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, and they looked very
Booker and Durant looked fantastic in that small sample, too.
Small sample against bad teams. But like, I don't think we need a huge sample to just like leap to the conclusion that, adding Kevin Durant to
a talk about struggling half court offenses. That's a team that's not going to struggle in the half court. And like, three of the best mid-range scorers in the last decade.
I know giving up McCall is not insignificant, right? Especially on the defensive end. And we know how much...
Can you imagine if he was on the Sixers? They didn't trade him.
That might be nice for them right now.
You put Bridges at the three, move Tobias back to the four, and you have a starting five of Maxey, Harden, Bridges, Tobias, and Embiid. Jesus Christ.
So I guess let's just lump Denver and Phoenix together here. Ceiling of winning the title, right?
100%.
And then I guess let's just flip back to the East to close it out. The top three teams we haven't really...
Their floor is probably Eastern Conference Finals for all of them. Like, obviously not all of them can make it.
But. Right, but like you're disappointed if you don't make it as one of those three teams, right? Philly, Milwaukee, and Boston.
If you're a fan of Boston, Milwaukee, or Philly and you lose in the second round, it's a disaster. It's a full-on disaster. And in my case, it's a full-on home run, because that means Cleveland probably beat one of those teams.
So out of those three, I think obviously Philly are third, right? Third for me out of those three.
I don't know, man. Boston's looked pretty bad lately to their expectations. Milwaukee has now clearly jumped to one. Like, it's not even, it's with a bullet. Like, Milwaukee is the best team in basketball. Yes,
I agree.
And they probably have been for like a month and a half.
We did literally 10 minutes ago hear from Joe Mazzulla saying that the Time Lord should be back between 5 and 7 days from now. So for me, that is a huge, like, and that's my hang up with Boston.
That doesn't move me though in terms of where they are with Milwaukee, right? Like, okay. If you want to use that as a tiebreaker for Philly, sure. I mean, because he does defensively.
You need that man against Milwaukee. Oh, 100%. You don't have him, you're done.
Yeah. Horford's done a good job against Embiid, but more so like Giannis. He's been better against Giannis.
Well, and that's you need that other option. Horford can only do so much.
You can't be having Blake Griffin come in.
No, or Mike Muscala. Like, these guys can't be playing real minutes against Embiid, against Giannis, against Brooke Lopez, right? Like, it's just like these teams are
Whoever plays in the Eastern Conference Finals, you know, the two or the three of these teams has a chance to go down as one of the best playoff series in a long time. These teams are just that good. I guess if you're like we have Milwaukee number one, but I don't know, man. Like, something about this Philly team feels different this year.
I mean, they are also very good. Yeah. Like, I am not shocked if they are the team that comes out of these, because like, what's it going to take? Like, we know Chris Middleton is getting back to more full minutes as of late. Giannis is like, all these guys are just kind of like, they're trying to get to the finish line. It feels like over this last week or two, where we've seen guys kind of one by one rest games and you know, limit their minutes a little bit. Now that they've opened up a 3-game lead there in the East, I don't know, man. It's really hard at this point to make a case against Milwaukee, but it's not crazy if they lose one of those guys as they did last year. They are still a very good team, but I don't think that it's super hot take, Zach. I know. If they lose one of those three all-star caliber guys, then they become the Milwaukee of last year, where they're probably losing in seven, not just to Boston, but also to Philly. Like, because, like you mentioned, Philly is really good. Philly might be the 2 seed. They're a game back of Boston now. 5 games in a row, they have won. And Joel Embiid might end up being the MVP. I think that's like, if we're looking at the betting markets right now, right? Philly's where the value is. You've got Bucks plus 340, Celtics also plus 340. Then you've got Suns and Nuggets. Philly 11-1. That's where the value is to me, whether you're betting Eastern Conference winner or a title right now in terms of those top teams. 11-1 on Philly to win the title is the bet I think I would make if I'm trying to look for some good value and not necessarily betting who I think is going to win. Obviously, right now, that would be Milwaukee.
Yeah. The other thing with Milwaukee, too, is how good Brook's been. Mm-hmm. Like, it's been great since he's been there, but this year he's just been absurd defensively. He'll have his occasional games where he hits, you know, 7 of 10 threes or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I do like the additions they made with Ingles and Jay Crowder. I think those will help in the playoffs. Pat Connaughton's minutes when he gets in there are pretty reliable as well. Mm-hmm. But like, for me, like, Middleton has to be healthy. We've seen that. He doesn't, but like, Middleton can be like 70% Chris Middleton and they can still win the title.
Sure.
But he has to be out there.
Yeah.
Because this is another team that, as good as they are, they can struggle and get a little bit stagnant in the half court sometimes because Giannis is somebody that likes to get out and transition and stuff like that. So I'm very excited to see. I'm assuming it'll be, you know, two of these teams in the Eastern Conference Finals, and I think it probably goes seven, you know, barring some injury to a player from either team.
Let's wrap it up like this. I know we made our preseason predictions. As long as my two teams are in, Clippers over Bucks, that will be my official stance. But let's just say today we're making a special pick. We have to call right now what we think the finals matchup and winner will be. I will say Milwaukee now winning the title over Phoenix. What would be your pick right now if you had to revise it from the early season selection?
Milwaukee. I struggle with the West.
I feel like you're still on Denver, is what you want to say.
I am, but I'm also more on Phoenix and Golden State than I had been.
Sure.
Obviously Phoenix.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to go Milwaukee. And because I just think it's inevitable, fuck it. Golden State.
All right. That's what I wanted to hear. Let's go off the board.
That's also the finals matchup I've been wanting for like 5 years now. Like ever since Giannis has become Giannis.
It's a good point. So
let's get it.
I think that's a good thing, right, as we close things out here, is there are a lot of finals matchups that I think we would be very pleased with. And I know you would be pleased with this, but like anything but like Cleveland-Sacramento. That would be the worst.
I mean,
I'm still watching, but you know,
for those fan bases, it'd be fucking awesome.
Yeah.
But yeah, the rest of the league's like, what the hell just happened?
All right, everybody, we appreciate you tuning in, sticking with us here on this episode of the FTN NBA podcast. You'll hear, you know, where to follow us. Maybe not the correct pronunciation on the outro. So I guess, Adam, I'll ask you, what do you got going on here at FTN in the coming week or two? You know, football side, basketball side. Tell the people what they can expect.
Yeah, so first of all, if you've been looking for content for all the trades and free agency signings from the NFL, Jeff Ratcliffe's been doing an awesome job providing breakdowns for everything. We have a free agent tracking page where you can see all the moves, and there's write-ups for everything. So check that out. And then for me, I'm doing the Dynasty podcast with Jeremy Popolars multiple times a week, doing some episodes on the upcoming prospects, and of course reacting to the news we saw. And then I'll be doing some articles coming up. Starting next week, I'll be doing an article, multiple articles, hopefully. Ton of great content. I'll also add baseball starts in like 15 days. And I believe we still have the early birds package up.
I believe you're correct, yeah.
Last time I checked, there was about 20 left. So there, 20 out of 100. So yeah, I mean, I've talked about this before. I haven't been as into baseball as I used to be. But for me, for like fantasy baseball, I feel like the tools that you can use are the most important than any sport. Mm-hmm. And the ones we have at FTN are amazing. I mean, Kyle has the home run tracker or predictor, mm-hmm. which was like scary accurate last season. Alex Blickle has a tool, I think a pitching tool, and optimizers, lineups. Like baseball is such a tough sport for DFS and for fantasy that for me, like, having the tools at your disposal for baseball is more important than any other sport. So you get all that, you get all the content, everything, all that great stuff for the early bird. Plus there's, I think it comes with season long stuff too, which is huge. We have Vlad, Matty Wood doing a bunch of great season long stuff. So that is where to go for baseball content. Again, I think it's like 15 days away till the season starts. So I would highly, highly recommend checking that out.
NBA content rolls on as always. Final season-long article going up later today on Wednesday. Of course, the streams, the ranks. We brought back the Murray model article there on the NBA side of things. That is a hit as always. I'm going to have some underdog NBA playoff best ball content coming out in the next week, as those drafts have gotten underway, and the closer we get to the season, the easier it is to know who exactly you're trying to stack up there in those tournaments. Speaking of best ball, Adam, I put in a lot of work on that NBA best ball content preseason, 150 drafts. We are into the semifinals. I've got 8 of 150 teams left, 5 more slates.
Who's the like consensus player that's helped you the most?
Jokic, again, of course. Okay.
I assumed it was Jokic or Giannis. So.
Yeah, in the preseason content, I went back and looked at the final, the teams that made the final last year. I believe it was like right around 90% of them had Jokic. So not a lot of skill involved there in just getting the number one pick. But you've got to have those ancillary pieces that help you once you get to, now that we're in the semifinals, a lot of people have Jokic here. So, I've got 8 of the 150 teams remaining. If the slate ended right now, 3 of them would advance. I've also got teams in 3rd, 4th, and 6th in their respective leagues. So I'm hoping to get as many teams through to the final as I possibly can. Cause, we'd like that nice little payday up top. I think it's $17,500 up there. So I got my fingers crossed that those teams are going to come through.
It's a lot of FC Austin gear.
That's a lot of Austin FC gear.
I said FC Austin. Look at me.
It's okay. Casual. Casual. What are you going to do? Casual. Hey, it's an authentic Wembanyama jersey come this summer, I think.
Ooh, I didn't know you were a Pistons fan.
With that, everybody, we appreciate you tuning in once again. This has been the FTN NBA podcast. For Adam, I'm Zach. We'll talk to you guys next time. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening to the FTN NBA podcast. Be sure to follow the hosts on Twitter at APPfeiffer24 and KA Wissenberg DFS.